This is VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil. A hostage in Gaza is rescued by Israel after 326 days of captivity. AP correspondent Joe Fetterman reports that rescued hostage Qaid Farhan al-Qaidi did speak afterwards.
Al-Qaidi spoke to Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu after his rescue from his hospital bed, thanked the Israeli leader for rescuing him, but he also reminded him that many others remain behind in captivity.
Israeli forces found him alone underground in Gaza in a vast tunnel network, the first time since the October 7th attack that ignited the war. The 52-year-old Israeli man was taken Tuesday to a hospital in Israel where members of his family gathered around his bedside in a joyful reunion. President Joe Biden's top Middle East advisor on Tuesday held talks in Doha with senior Qatari leaders on the efforts to complete a ceasefire and hostage deal between Israel and Hamas, as well as on the Qatari prime minister's meeting this week with Iran's president. White House senior advisor Brett McGurk's talks with the prime minister and foreign affairs minister came after the prime minister's Monday visit to Tehran to meet with Iran's president. UN nuclear watchdog Chief Rafael Grossi said that Russia's Kursk power plant is at risk of a nuclear accident, while a frontline battle rages in a region just 40 kilometers from the plant. Reuters correspondent Fiona Jones.
Grossi, the head of the International Atomic Energy Agency, gave his warning on Tuesday after an inspection.
When a plant is operating, the temperature is much higher, and if there was the case of an impact or something that could affect it, there would be serious consequences.
President Vladimir Putin accused Ukraine last week of trying to attack the Kursk plant. That's after Ukrainian troops carved out a portion of Russian territory this month. Ukraine has yet to respond to the accusations that it attacked the facility.
This is VOA News. UN nuclear watchdog chief, again, Rafael Grossi, said Russia's Kursk power plant is at risk of a nuclear accident. Iran's supreme leader opened the door Tuesday to renewed negotiations with the United States over his country's rapidly advancing nuclear program, telling its civilian government that there was no harm in engaging with its enemy. The Ayatollah Ali Khamenei's remarks set clear red lines for any talks taking place under the government of the reformist president and renewed his warnings that Washington was not to be trusted. AP Washington correspondent Sagar Magani reports that special counsel Jack Smith has filed a new indictment in Donald Trump's January 6 case following last month's Supreme Court immunity ruling.
The indictment keeps the same criminal charges against Trump but narrows the allegations against him, removing references to Trump's interactions with the Justice Department. The Supreme Court said last month that Trump is entitled to immunity for that conduct. Still, the indictment keeps the allegations that Trump tried to pressure then-Vice President Mike Pence to refuse to certify the electoral vote count. Chief Justice John Roberts wrote last month the interactions between the two men amounted to official conduct, for which Trump is at least presumptively immune from prosecution. Sagar Magani, Washington.
AP correspondent Ben Thomas reports on a deadly explosion at a Delta Airlines facility.
Two workers are dead and a third seriously injured after a tire explosion at a Delta Airlines maintenance facility near the Atlanta airport. The airline says it occurred while wheel components were being disassembled at a wheel and brake shop. The parts were not attached to a plane at the time. The Federal Occupational Safety and Health Administration has opened an investigation, and Delta says it's working with authorities to determine what happened. The cause has not been released. In a statement, the airline says the Delta family is heartbroken and has extended its full support to family and colleagues. I'm Ben Thomas.
Mexico's president told reporters Tuesday he has put relations with the United States and Canadian embassies on pause after the two countries voiced concerns over proposed judicial overhaul that critics say could undermine the independence of the judiciary. President Andres Manuel Lopez Obrador did not elaborate on what a pause would mean. It's not a term used in formal diplomatic codes, and Mexico's foreign ministry did not respond to an Associated Press request for a comment about what all it could entail. More at VOAnews.com. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa. From the Voice of America, I'm James Botte, Washington. Today is Wednesday, August 28th, and here are some of the stories we are following. President William Ruto nominates an East African leader to endorse Raila Odinga's candidacy to chair the African Union Commission.
It's a good gesture because it means, number one, East Africa realizes if we get this seat, we are going to, it will give us mileage diplomatically in the African Union.
Vaccine shortages hinder mpox inoculation in Africa. Flooding kills hundreds in Nigeria as authorities brace for more destruction. A Ugandan opposition party split in two. Food demand is creating substantial opportunities for Africa's food processors. Emergency responders search for the missing following a dam burst in eastern Sudan.
Our humanitarian colleagues tell us that according to local authorities, 30 people have died, but our humanitarian colleagues fear the number of casualties could be much higher, taking into consideration that many more people are missing or displaced.
And border security is motivating voters in the U.S. state of Arizona. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Kenya, on Tuesday, launched the candidacy of Raila Odinga as chairperson for the African Union Commission. Odinga, a veteran opposition leader and former prime minister, is seeking to replace Musa Faki Mahamat of Chad as African Union Commission chairperson. Kenyan President William Ruto led the launch at State House Nairobi, attended by three presidents, two former presidents, and senior officials from across East Africa. Edgar Gitua is an international security and diplomatic expert at the U.S. International University in Nairobi. He tells viewers Douglas Opuga that the support of the East African region is crucial.
It's a good gesture because it means, number one, East Africa realizes if we get this seat, we are going to go ahead and we are going to, it will give us mileage diplomatically in the African Union. So it is a step in the right direction. I know there will be stiff competition going forward, but at least getting the East African bloc to speak in the same language is a positive sign.
What do you make of the competition Mr. Odinga has? It seems from Madagascar, from Mauritius, Djibouti. Is it a foregone conclusion Mr. Odinga will have the post?
No, it is not a foregone conclusion. Because once again, what happens at this, at the AUC voting, the countries get divided between the Francophones and the Anglophones. So there will be that pool, there will be that place, that cultural language barrier. So it will be the Anglophone countries versus the Francophone countries. So he has his work cut out for him to go and campaign among the French-speaking countries to convince them that he will also represent their interests. The Anglophones may support him, but the Francophones will definitely create a problem. That has always been the play, and I don't expect anything different. So a lot of his campaigning needs to be within the Francophone French West African countries, because now Djibouti could be also persuading the Francophones to support them.
What do you think is the advantage of having the South African community leaders united and supporting his bid?
When he gets the South African community, the EAC bloc behind him, automatically it means countries like DRC, which is naturally a Francophone country, if they throw their weight behind him, that is one less vote for Djibouti, for countries like Djibouti and Mauritius. And now, if you get the seven countries in the East African community supporting him, those are seven campaigners, people who will campaign for him. They will reach out to their network of countries and friends, and that means he's getting more votes. So that is a step in the right direction for him, getting the East African region, because you cannot sell your bid if your home region does not support you. So you need to have a support base. Like any in international politics, you need your support base from one place. It's not going to be a walk in the park, so he should not be overconfident. Let him go outside there. Let him talk to French West Africa. Let him go to the SADC countries. And then hopefully, come February 25, he will win that seat.
Edgar Gitua is an international security and diplomatic expert at the U.S. International University in Nairobi. He spoke with Douglas Opuga from Nairobi. The Africa Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, which officially declared the ongoing mpox outbreak a public health emergency recently, has said that the continent will need 10 million doses of vaccines to stop the spread of the disease. Experts, however, say the global shortage of mpox vaccines will affect any inoculation drives in Africa. Juma Majanga reports from the VOA Africa News Center in Nairobi.
Professor Salim Abdul Karim, a virologist at the Nelson Mandela School of Medicine in Durban, South Africa, says there are currently three types of vaccines for mpox, but they are hard to obtain.
They aren't available. And if people are to start manufacturing it now, it'll take quite a while before doses will become available. The second is that they're very expensive. They sell for between $100 to $200 a dose, and you need to give everybody two doses. So that's a very expensive vaccine.
The mpox ailment, formerly known as monkeypox, due to its original discovery in monkeys in Denmark, was first discovered in humans in 1970 in the Democratic Republic of Congo, which has become the epicenter of the current outbreak. Karim says mpox, which previously did not pose serious health concerns, has been mutating, and the current strain is worrying, especially for Africa's younger population, which is more susceptible.
If left unchecked, we will see mpox spread quite rapidly. And the reason it will spread rapidly is because it's now sexually transmitted.
Since July, mpox cases have been detected in Burundi, Kenya, Rwanda, and Uganda, as well as the DRC. Kenya has recorded two cases and hopes to receive vaccine doses as part of the international effort to stop transmission of the disease. Kenya's Ministry of Health officials, however, say they are worried about the global vaccine shortage. Dr. Patrick Amoth is the Director General for Health.
Africa requires 10 million doses. What could be available up to the end of the year is 2 million doses. If Bavarian Nordic, the manufacturer of the vaccine, repurposes its manufacturing capacity to stop manufacturing or scale down on manufacture of the other vaccines and prioritize manufacture of mpox vaccine. So in terms of priority, of course, it will be the number of cases that each and every county gets. So for now, we cannot even be able to start talking about vaccination if you have only recorded two cases of the disease.
Amoth says there is no cause for alarm, as the country has put in place measures to deal with the outbreak of the disease.
We have heightened our coordination through the operationalization of the Public Health Emergency Operations Center. We have formed rapid response teams to be able to support counties in terms of contact tracing and other logistics required, including case management.
Karim says he is challenging African countries to move towards developing their own vaccines locally.
It's not rocket science. It just needs the investments to be made to do that.
As the wait for vaccines continues, health experts say testing, contact tracing, and public education are the best strategy in dealing with the outbreak in Africa, at least for now. Juma Majanga, VOA News, Nairobi.
Emergency responders were scrambling on Tuesday to find out how many people remain missing after floods caused water to burst through a dam in eastern Sudan. Reuters reports that the collapse of the Arba Dam on Sunday killed 30 people and likely dozens more. UN spokesperson Stefan Dujarric briefed reporters on Tuesday.
Regarding the floods and the collapse of the Arba Dam near Port Sudan, our humanitarian colleagues tell us that according to local authorities, 30 people have died, but our humanitarian colleagues fear the number of casualties could be much higher, taking into consideration that many more people are missing or displaced. Local authorities tell us that 70 villages around the dam have been impacted, 20 of those villages destroyed, while 70 schools have been damaged or destroyed, and thousands of animals are missing. Some 50,000 people are living on western side of the dam, have had their homes destroyed or damaged, and people urgently need water, food, shelter, and assistance. That is, of course, according to the authorities. The extent of the impact on the eastern banks still needs to be assessed, as road has been cut off. Local rescue teams are attempting to open these roads. An interagency team led by OCHA has been deployed to the impacted areas. The team is coordinating with partners, and the authorities will support the assessment to further determine the extent of the damage and people's most urgent humanitarian needs. The team will also help to coordinate the response, which is being led by the government. The damage at the dam is expected to have wider consequences, as it is the primary source of fresh water for Port Sudan and will impact water supplies there. Since the onset of the rains in June, floods have wreaked havoc across many parts of Sudan, with the most affected states being in North and West Darfur and the River Nile states. Before the dam collapsed on Sunday, more than 310,000 people have been impacted by flood across the country, where we don't need to remind you there is a conflict going on.
That was UN spokesperson Stephane Dujarric. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Wednesday, August 28th. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Uganda's top opposition party, the Forum for Democratic Change, FDC, has split into two factions, one led by five-time presidential candidate Kizza Besigye. The other faction is led by Patrick Amurai. As Mugumi Davis Rakaringi reports from Kampala, Besigye's new faction is called the People's Front for Freedom Party.
Freedom for all.
All for freedom.
All for freedom.
Freedom for all.
Hello. Hello.
Those were former members of Uganda's opposition, FDC Party, chanting slogans for the new party in Kampala on Tuesday. New party member Kenneth Jofle Opoka claims the People's Front for Freedom has the backing of all Ugandans.
The name of the new political vehicle that can transform this nation is People's Front for Freedom. When you go to the village, in all villages in Uganda, there's a phone. So our symbol will be phone, so that now you can call and say, where are you? Hello, and that. And then our slogan is freedom for all and all for freedom. Because we have been in captivity for a long time, and I think it is time to get out of the cap.
Most members of the new party are from the FDC. Disagreements started some time ago over money allocations and mistrust between its members. John Chikonyogo, the spokesperson of the FDC, welcomed his former comrades' move to form a new party.
Now that they have started their own party, I think they have time to concentrate on fighting the common enemy to both of us, the NRM government, and we continue from different directions. Instead of wasting all the time fighting each other, and we don't even talk about the issues that concern the people of Uganda.
It is not the first time former FDC top leaders have formed a new party or joined the ruling government. Both the Speaker and the Deputy Speaker of Parliament were recruited from the opposition party. The Inspectorate of the Government is headed by former member Betty Kamya. Former party leader Mugisha Muntu started his own party, the Alliance for Transformation. Former FDC mobilizer Ingrid Tulinawe says new members have enough experience to galvanize public support and make the new party a force to reckon with.
We are going to traverse all this country. Especially, we withdraw the cards, the materials that we had given them previously. We will be issuing new cards, new materials, new hope. We are refreshing, we are reloading, we are refocusing, we are moving forward.
The Electoral Commission is expected to give the new party a green light in the coming days after determining whether the members have met all legal requirements for forming a new party. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Rwakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
Nigeria's National Emergency Management Agency is warning that fatalities caused by severe flooding in the country will increase in September and October, the usual peak period for rainfall. The floods have already killed more than 170 people and displaced hundreds of thousands of more in Nigeria this year. Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja.
According to the latest tally on the National Emergency Management Agency tracker, some 170 people have died and some 205,000 displaced by flooding in 28 out of Nigeria's 36 states. Bauchi, Zamfara, Sokoto, Niger, and Jigawa states are the most impacted. The flooding has been caused by unprecedented rainfall and the rise in Niger and Benue rivers. And officials worry more bad weather may be ahead. Ezekiel Manzo is the NEMA spokesperson. He spoke to VOA via phone.
We
are presently responding to a number of locations where flooding have occurred. The situation is not ending because we are just approaching the peak of the season. The incidences that we are having are mostly in the northern part of the country. From the reports available to us, River Benue is rising. River Niger is also rising. And once the water level is high there, it will ultimately flow into our countries.
The floods have also washed away thousands of hectares of farmlands, compounding an already dire food security situation caused by widespread insecurity. Manzo says authorities have been advising and helping to evacuate locals in flood-prone plains, as well as providing relief for hundreds of thousands already impacted.
We are conducting assessment. We are increasing our awareness to sensitize the people, you know, to move immediately from the floodplain to avoid being washed away by the water.
The Nigerian government estimates 31 states will experience severe flooding this year. In Jigawa, one of the most impacted states, authorities have been building embankments to reduce the impact of the flooding. State Governor Umar Namadi told Al Jazeera that the disaster is diverting crucial government funds.
A lot of attention is being diverted to that area because you need to save that situation. So because of that, yes, of course, a lot of revenue will be lost. Government revenue will be lost. Not only that, a lot of extra expenditure will have to be incurred.
In 2022, Nigeria recorded its worst flooding in a decade. The deluge killed more than 600 people and destroyed swaths of cultivated lands. Last week, the 2024 Global Report on Food Crisis named Nigeria second among nations with the highest number of hungry people. Nigeria's Minister of State for Agriculture said up to 51% of farming areas are susceptible to flooding this year. Manzo said Nigeria's authorities will compensate the farmers, but that in the meantime, it is paramount for everyone to get to safety. Timothy Obiezu, VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
Food demand is creating substantial opportunities for Africa's food processors, according to the report by the Malabo Malpelier Panel. It says the rise in population, urbanization, and middle-class incomes in Africa is creating marketable opportunities for processed foods. Marie Odhiambo reports.
The latest report by the Malabo Malpelier Panel, a group of international agriculture experts who support policies that accelerate food and nutritional security in Africa, indicates that population growth will encourage food processing companies to produce food and jobs. The panel says policy innovations in the sector offer African governments a framework to adopt policies that will increase food production. AP co-chair Malabo Malpelier Forum.
Food processing is one of the most important pathways for improving the nutrition status of many population groups across Africa and boosting the agri-food systems and beyond the economy development at large. Assuming, of course, that food safety requirements are rigorously respected and controlled by the relevant authorities across the value chain.
Africa's population is projected to grow by 2.5% annually from 1.2 billion in 2016 to 2.4 billion people by 2050. The continent's urban population is also expected to increase from 43% in 2020 to 60% by 2050, with the middle class making up to 42% of the population by 2060. Salah says African countries should take advantage of changes in market demand instead of relying on food imports.
The continent has been engaged in the traditional processing of foods since the past decades. However, the rising demands of processed foods call for increased adoption of advanced technologies to enhance the production of these products. These could contribute to reducing the dependency on imports to the continent.
The food processing sector faces many challenges ranging from environmental factors like climate change and water shortages, as well as structural constraints related to improving infrastructure and profitability. Josepha Sako, the head of Agriculture, Rural Development, Blue Economy and Sustainable Environment at the African Union Commission, says Africa has had the highest agricultural growth in the past two decades despite its challenges.
20 years of implementation of CADEP has seen an increase in Africa's gross domestic product, our GDP, although we could have done more, but at least this instrument is really helping us to shape the way of the transformation of agriculture on the continent. So the progress has, however, been slower than anticipated due to immense challenges and shocks such as the climate change and global economic disruption.
At the same time, the Deputy Executive Secretary of the Intergovernmental Authority on Development, IGAD Mohamed Ware, says food production is still limited to economic shocks, local currency depreciation, low foreign currency reserves, a high public debt burden, and volatile food prices.
While eradicating hunger is an achievable goal, it requires a fundamental shift in our approaches. There is an urgent need for proactive collaboration to implement sustainable solutions and strengthen our resilience mechanisms against the impact of climate change and conflict.
The 14th meeting of the Malabo-Montpellier Forum calls on governments and other stakeholders to collaborate and implement strategies that promote the production of healthy, safe, nutritious, and high-quality processed foods. For VOA Africa, I am Moreno Jembo in San Francisco.
Algerian authorities on Tuesday arrested opposition figure Fethi Gharis before taking him to an unknown place. His wife and the Algerian CNLD prisoners' rights group said. His wife says Gharis, the former coordinator of the now banished leftist Democratic and Social Movement Party, was arrested by plainclothes police at his home in the capital, Algiers. Immigration is one of the top issues for U.S. voters this November as they decide who will occupy the White House. The difference in policy between the two presidential candidates is stark. VOA's senior Washington correspondent Carolyn Presutti begins our story at a dusty desert stop in Arizona.
This was a gold mining town, the richest strike in the state of Arizona at the time.
Now a ghost town.
Yeah. Yeah.
Patty Burris lives here with Vino, her 38-year-old donkey.
Come here, buddy. There you go.
Burris says she's tired of undocumented migrants sneaking across her land from the Mexican border. Former President Donald Trump gets her vote.
He's going to deport them. Yes, I am all for that. Absolutely. Get them out of here. And he can do it. He knows how.
While President Donald Trump ordered that a 740-kilometer wall be built at the U.S. southwestern border, this is the Arizona part of it. On his first day in office, Joe Biden paused any new construction.
They could have had it completed in 3 weeks.
Donald Trump returned to an Arizona border wall last Thursday, although the Washington Post reports the section he visited was built before he became president.
Because there's never been a border in the whole world that's leaked like this border, with all those millions and millions of criminals coming through.
Democratic voters at their convention say their party is more tolerant. Sandra Cano moved from Colombia to the U.S. as a teenager.
Immigrants, we belong, the neighbors, we take care of each other. That's really what it's all about.
If elected, Vice President Kamala Harris promises a path to citizenship and the return of a bipartisan immigration bill that died in Congress.
The Border Patrol endorsed it. But Donald Trump believes a border deal would hurt his campaign. So he ordered his allies in Congress to kill the deal.
Back at the ghost town.
So Harris would not control the border as
don't believe a word she says. Where's she been in the last 4 years?
Nobody stops by the old deserted town much anymore. Burris says she'd like to go back to the time when she saw more tourists come through than migrants. Carolyn Presutti, VOA News, Pierce, Arizona.
And that's it for this Wednesday, August 28th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for coming on board with us this morning. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Barton, Washington, wishing you a lovely day. Thank you.